Greetings, friends, and welcome to the 15th edition of the Rhode Island Builders Association's News and Views podcast. I'm your host, John Marcantonio, your CEO, and it's September 11th, 2023. Today with us is Jim Tobin, the new, I can say new, CEO of the National Association of Home Builders. Welcome, Jim.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here. I guess I'm still new. I'm not quite sure how long I get to call myself new, but I'm going to ride the honeymoon phase for as long as I can. But just over 100 days, and as an old political hack, 100 days is always the kind of the big demarcation point for a new administration. So I've kind of looked at that as a way to kind of mark time where we've been, and more importantly, how we've set ourselves up to be successful in the future. So. Great to be with you all today and talk to the Rhode Island Builders.
And also with us here today, and great to have you, Jim. Thanks for taking the time. Also with us here today is Robert Baldwin, also known as Bob Baldwin, from the Rhode Island Builders Association. Bob is the state Rhode Island rep for NAHB, and he's also on the executive committee of the National Association of Home Builders. Bob, I'm going to let you start asking the questions to Jim, and I'm going to jump in when I see fit, and we'll go from there.
Morning, Bob.
Hey, hello, everybody. Hi, Jim. Glad to have you on the podcast for all our members in Rhode Island and anybody else that gets to see this later on. I hope they tune in. So as just if you could give the audience some background, because you and I have dealt with each other at NAHB for a long time, 10, 15 years, and your previous position was in the political advocacy arena. So if you could start with that, fill in the audience as to your background and then the process of what we went through. To come to the hiring of a new EO, of which there were multiple candidates, and thankfully you were picked. That's my own personal view anyways. I have to put that in there because it's God's honest truth.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Bob. Thank you. So I'm Phil Neuwingler. I'm originally from Connecticut, so right next door, and so came to DC a long time ago, back in 1995, and joined NAHB on September 1st, 1998. So I just crested my 25th anniversary here at NAHB. And Bob, like you said, I grew up on the government affairs side, started as a line lobbyist a long, long time ago, and worked my way up through some of our bigger policy portfolios. I did our environmental policy, including Waters of the U.S. I did tax policy for the membership, and was around during the great crash and the great recession in the late 2000s. And then now obviously the COVID disruption. And so really, like I said, cut my teeth on the government affairs side and the policy side. And when the opportunity came to take a run at the opening CEO position, I went for it. It's, at this point, I really feel like not that, NAHB is not just a job. Probably when I started back when I was a kid, now it's my career. It's part of my family. It's really just kind of who I am now. So to be able to work my way through the search process, give my vision about where I think NAHB needs to go, and while honoring our past, but how do we move to the future and service the great men and women of our industry? I am enormously appreciative that that my vision resonated with everybody, and here I am, and really excited to roll up my sleeves and get going and make sure that we are talking to our members, listening to our members, probably more importantly than anything, and really becoming a partner with our state and local associates of the country to make sure that we're bringing the right programs and services to you all to make sure that our members remain successful.
So thanks for that. And as just to also inform the membership, this is the National Association of Home Builders. And we touch areas from Puerto Rico to Northern Alaska, Northern tip of Maine, all the way to Hawaii and Guam and the Marianas Islands. That's the breadth of the association. So we have a lot of different divergent views, a lot of different territory, a lot of different climatology areas we have to deal with nationally. Just speak about some of the divergent things that we have to address nationally, but still keep it all within the umbrella of housing and the housing industry.
Yeah. So Bob, I always talk about the mission of NAHB. NAHB has the twin missions, right? First and foremost, our ability to provide the opportunity for safe, decent, affordable housing. That's number one. Number two is that we are, our goal is to make sure that the men and women of the industry are successful in their business of pursuing safe, decent, affordable housing opportunities for all Americans. So we kind of wear two hats here. In a lot of ways, we're a business association as much as we're a housing association. You know, we're, again, providing business opportunities, and our business happens to be housing. Of course, our associates, remodelers, multifamily, single family, custom, first time, doesn't matter. We cover the breadth of everything. And you just said the geographic diversity of the U.S. housing market is really kind of where you start. Just different economies. The New England economy is much different than the Southeastern economy. It's different Texas and then the Sand States out in Nevada and Arizona. And then you get to the West Coast economies, which look a lot like the East Coast, the New England economies. And then, of course, you got Hawaii and Alaska and all everybody in between. So from there, you know, how you build the code requirements in those different areas, the economic climate in those areas, heck, the regulatory climate in those areas, you know, and that's the diversity we have to provide. How do we bring our products and services to service every one of those corners of the Federation? Because what works in Rhode Island may not work in Nevada, and what works in Nevada probably doesn't work in Seattle, Washington. So it's making sure that we've got that depth of knowledge that can help us answer those questions. And of course, you know, our economics team, you know, Rob Dietz has been a frequent visitor with you all, you know, in a lot of ways, being able to help members in all corners of the Federation and geographic regions to understand where the market's going over the next 3 months, 6 months, and a year, really trying to help our members prepare for the business cycle as best we can.
So just touch a little bit with Rob Dietz, if you can, in the current status, because we all... We know this, those that have been of us that like you and I and John and stuff that grew up in this, we know very, very well that housing and automobiles are more sensitive to interest rates than any other industry. Right. Interest rates drive the affordability of housing, automobiles, payments, the size of payments, the length of payments, et cetera. Just touch about that for a little bit as to what's been going on with the Fed and how, whether we have a seat at the table with the Fed, does deal directly with Rob Dietz and his staff, and then see about what we think the outlook is going forward in the next year or two.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's number one on everybody's mind. So we do have, you know, we are able to communicate with the Fed about what impact having on housing. And I know how frustrating it is for our members to watch rates keep creeping up. In fact, we're getting ready for the next, maybe a hold, maybe it's going to be a rate increase over the next week or two from the Fed. So it's, for us, it's about telling the Fed now, hey, enough's enough. Congratulations, you've tamped down inflation. Maybe it's not at their 2% target yet, but it's getting there. Why don't we pause a little bit and allow the economy to kind of figure out where it is, right? I still think that, you know, as much as the job market has been relatively strong, we still have to let the full effect of these rate increases work their way into the economy. And we have not seen that yet. But for housing, what we need is the bond market to settle down and then allow the mortgage market to follow suit and settle down as well. We're still hovering above 7% for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. That has really frozen the market. We've really finally seen the marketplace slow down enough where housing is, we think, is going to have a pretty rough next quarter, maybe even into next year, because rates are just too high. Interestingly, you know, Bob, I think what the most interesting phenomenon of the rate environment right now is, in a normal market, you've got 6 months, or you know, maybe certainly over around 6 months of supply on the market.
Right. Right.
And usually newly constructed homes make up about 10 to 12% of for sale homes in any given month. Right now, because so many people are rate locked, how many of us are sitting in 3%, 4% mortgages? We're not moving. We're not going to certainly not going to refi. Lord knows the mortgage brokers or bankers are really hurting because there's no refi business. But people are just going to sit in their homes till rates come back down to earth a little bit, which has allowed new home portion of that monthly for sale number, 40% by most readings right now. So an opportunity for our members to kind of really sell some homes where people are taking a good look at new construction where before they didn't have to. 7% seems to really be the break point. I think if the Fed can slow down, we drift back down in the sixes, people are going to realize there's a new normal here, that 6%, you know, buy if you can, if you have a down payment, you can finance it. You get into home ownership now because you know that rates are going to fall further, you know, within the next couple of years or so. So there's a lot of strategy involved right now, but we're going to be in this high rate environment. And even if the Fed does pause, they're going to hold rates probably through 2024 at the high rate before they start easing again.
I would disagree just slightly with you. I think that they might start because election is the most paramount of issues next year. And I just have a sneaking suspicion, it's Bob's sneaking suspicion here, that the rates might start to ease down. Just, I don't know, third quarter before November, say, maybe again in October before November, just a possibility. But I'm just putting that out there for my own, that's my own personal opinion. The audience can do with that what they want, but let's just see who's right on that one.
Well, I will say, Bob, you have been prone to conspiracy theories in the past, and I know you still question the moon landing. So,
I do not question the moon. Get out of Dodge, Tobin. Who are you trying to kid? See, this is why he and I, all the people in the audience, this is why he and I get along so well for the last 15 years, because we do this to each other all the time.
See, Paul, you
come to Washington, D.C. with us and come to some of the meetings. By the way, I strongly suggest all you viewers do come to the IBS show. Yeah. You'd have a great time.
Yeah.
So, Paul, this is why we should have a disclaimer at the beginning of the podcast. You know, the opinions that are shared are those of the guests and the guests only. Right. It's all good. Hey, now I'm going to jump in here, Jim. So can you just explain to the average member here at the Rhode Island Builders Association how the National Association's advocacy works? I mean, they're very used to knowing how ours runs,
right?
How we connect together when needed, how support comes from, you know, the states to the national. National does to affect the states. I know you touched on it, but that I think that's something, given your history, I'd really like to communicate better and get a better understanding within our group as to how it all works.
Yeah, so NAHB and the Leadership Council in particular, they set our policies for the association, specifically our advocacy policies. And that works its way up through the grassroots, meaning that somebody comes to a Leadership Council meeting with an idea, something's bothering Bob. Lumber was something that, you know, Bob, you and I worked very close with over the last few years.
Right.
You know, what are the policies we have, what I would call the authority and direction by the members to go out and advocate for, you know, lumber, dropping lumber prices, or new trade agreement, or Waters of the U.S. So NHB is a wonderful grassroots organization where the ideas come up, you know, from the grassroots to direct staff. And that's the way it should work. And so once we get those ideas and those policies, our job is to turn those into action. And that means getting out onto Capitol Hill or into the administration or the regulatory agencies and advocating for what our members want. And whether it's Waters of the U.S. And working with EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers to recraft the rule that just came out last week, or in many instances, and what kind of got us to that point of a new rule is being party in a lawsuit to sue the Army Corps of Engineers and the EPA because their rule went too far past where Congress has made law back in 1972 and informed by other regulations and court decisions. But that's the ultimate kind of step we get from grassroots member to action in Washington, D.C. And then once we, you know, I always tell people we try to fix the laws if we can. We try to fix the regulation if we can. We try to sue them if it's wrong. And when it's all over and kind of the dust settles a little bit, then our job shifts to compliance. And compliance can be a dirty word, but it is important to NAHB to educate our members on how to deal with the regulatory environment as much as it is trying to change it for pro-building. And so that's kind of the second hat we wear, is really trying to help members navigate a new regulation or comply with it. We're watching that right now when it comes to Waters of the U.S. and our land developers. You know, how do we help them understand what the new permits are going to look like? What did the Supreme Court actually say? What did the Biden administration actually put into play? So there's a lot of aspects to our advocacy. And, you know, I know just coming from, you know, advocacy is tough in the sense you're banging your head against the wall. We don't get to be as successful as John is all the time when he's lobbyist in the government to help things through. You know, we bang our heads a lot against administration, So it's always a challenge, but that's what makes it fun.
And just, to dovetail with that, John, yeah. we've been involved in a lot of other issues that some of the members might be aware of, like silica.
Yeah.
Was an issue with the EPA. Lead is always an issue with the EPA. Waters of the USA, that's not something we have here. We have already have very restrictive covenants that we've had for a few years relative to wetlands and coastal resources. So we deal with that here. We've had developed some effectiveness in that arena here in the state of Rhode Island. But there's more issues. The lumber supply, the supply chain were issues that we were heavily involved with. And, you know, as I say to, and Jim and I have talked about this a lot for the sake of our members, if you're in Washington, D.C., and we're an industry that's nationwide, like we talked about, if you're in D.C. and you don't have a seat at the table, folks listening to this, you're going to be on the menu. They will eat you alive. And our purpose with the Board of Directors, the Leadership Council, of which I'm on the executive board, our purpose is to set policy, to give to leadership, including Jim. That's the seat we have at the table. And we have a very, very effective seat at the table. We have extraordinary credibility, regardless of the administration in Washington, D.C., regardless of that. And we have a very effective seat at the table. We try to keep ourselves off the menu. We're not always successful in doing that, but we do have a seat at the table. And even if we get stuck on the menu, we try to get us off the menu as fast as we can. So just all of you that are listening to that, please keep that in mind.
Yeah, just another example, too, about how the state and our politics and our rules, regulations, et cetera, tie into national. Just take a recent piece of legislation, a new law in Rhode Island about the 1099 independent contractor rules. Right. So Rhode Island is now tied to the FLSA, Fair Labor Standards Act, Department of Labor. Well, guess what? National has a seat in that regard. They lobby and discuss those issues. So a federal rule which affects the states, when we adopt that or make it our state rule, we have resources through NAHB to understand those issues and communicate those issues. And just take codes. You know, the International Code Council, Jim, I believe NAHB is actively involved in the final output of what the codes are. Now, mind you, states adopt what code they want to adopt. Rhode Island just jumped over 21, went to 24. But to get to that point, to get the information we needed to do that, we relied on our national association. And the codes themselves are negotiated in part by NAHB, correct?
Yeah, when it comes to the model codes and interacting with ICC, you're absolutely right, John. We are at the table to use Bob's. We're in the room, trying to advocate for housing affordability always. Paramount housing affordability as well as health and safety when it comes to structural codes, but also when it comes to the energy codes, trying to remind people that about payback periods. And how much is really important and critical to saving energy versus the cost of putting those components into a house. So you're right, we're coming to the end of the 24 IECC cycle. That will be that new model code, I think, comes out in the first quarter of 24. You're all, have leapt over the 21. The good news about the 24 code, in my mind, is that it gives you different ways, it'll give builders different ways to work with their customers to get to those energy efficiency goals. It's a little less prescriptive, which I think makes it easier and allows for a little bit more affordability to creep into this. Doesn't mean it's any less stringent. It just makes it a little bit easier to use. And I think that's really important as we, work through the process. And God, they're already talking about starting the 27 cycle. Can we just wait a few months at least? I mean, the code, it's just one after another. There's never a breath between these code cycles, because everybody, this is the frustration I have in D.C. Everybody thinks that the next code is, if it's brand new, it's got to be the best, right? It's bright and shiny. It's like, I have to have a brand new car every year just because the model year changed. It's trying to convince people that, we can have a steady march towards a better, higher efficiency, but let's do it that allows technologies to get cheaper, allows building technologies to get better. But we don't have to have this zeal to get to, net zero by 2025,
So I also want to talk for a second, John and Jim, about the partnership we've had, speaking of the 2024 Energy Code. As our viewers probably know, the Rhode Island Builders have been heavily involved in training with contractors and trade training to get people into the trades. We formed a partnership between Rhode Island Builders and NEHB to create a curriculum to teach the 2024 Energy Code. Jim, if you and John could touch on that, that'd be great.
Well, I think in a lot of ways it started with a trip up to visit y'all in July, and just you were all very kind of take me on a tour of your facilities and just how impressive what you all are doing up there to train contractors, and with REBA. It's just a really, really impressive operation. Then you all go ahead and you pass the new law that's going to put the 24 Energy Code into play. And you said, look, we can either lead this space or we can let others lead in this space and train people in the 24 code. We're looking for a way to lead. And so just a conversation between John and me and Bob, and we thought NHB could provide that curriculum to you all to go train Rhode Island contractors in the new code and make sure that we were seen as the source for how to build in Rhode Island. Right. And I mean REBA, and I mean us and NHB. And so we're working down that path, but to develop that curriculum and develop those modules in order to educate people on where you were, where you need to go, and how you can get there. And I think it's a great partnership. I'm very proud of the NHB team as well as the Rhode Island team that have really come together to talk about, here's what we need, here's how we can do it, build a time frame. But here's, I think, the great thing about it. Yeah, this is going to be a great opportunity for Rhode Island, but I think this is applicable, and we're going to design it this way to be used in other parts of the country.
Right. We've talked about that.
Yeah, right. So that's, I think, is what, when we look at things and how we can help our states, it's can this be expanded in order to help other folks? You know, Rhode Island is, you know, probably tip of the spear on 24. So who's coming right behind it? Connecticut, Massachusetts, they've got this real zest
for Maine.
Right? Yeah. So
New Hampshire.
So, you know, with some
Jersey, tweets, Delaware, there's a list of people that have contacted us that want to get help, need our help. And to the credit of our own team, which John leads up, we have a great team in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
We have the means and the staff already to roll this out to the contractors. And we're going to try to work this with the other states to assess those that are in the Northeast, roll out this joint effort as a training potential and start with us in the Northeast with Rhode Island. Even if we at Rhode Island end up teaching this remotely before the states and the locals get themselves set up to do the training themselves with their own, teaching the modules themselves. We've already been set up in Rhode Island to teach these programs remotely. It's not hard to teach them remotely from Rhode Island. And they can be taught elsewhere. They can be sitting anywhere in the United States, for that matter, being trained on how to use these new codes. So we're really excited about the partnership moving forward with NEHB in Rhode Island. And it's going to be a great effort. And it's going to be, the biggest thing is going to be to provide the service to the members, to teach contractors how you can do this affordably without going exclusively net zero, because quite frankly, that's what they want to do. They want to get it net zero off the grid. And when you've got 20 degree days like we do in Rhode Island with a wind chill 5 below 0, I got to tell you, the electric coils is your only backup. Your meter's going to spin so fast, it's going to fly off the house. And if you want that, I've done it. I actually build in that space. I've had a couple of customers that insisted they go with electric backup in a net zero house. I said, fine. And they had $1,200 electric bills. And I went back the next year, took out the electric coil backups and put in gas, which I told them to do in the first place. And it's really hard not to say I told you so when this happens, but they're not here on this podcast. So they're not hearing it. So either way, we know that we've got the data, we know the results. So let's roll it out together, start in the Northeast. And you and I are going to talk about that later after this call about, we have a fall board meeting in California coming up. So we're going to talk about that with the people in the Northeast, and then on a greater extent at the IBS in this winter time. So John, fill it in.
I'm glad you mentioned that. And Jim, since we have you for a limited period of time, there's two other things I want to talk about. Sure. Great job talking about the advocacy side. the workforce training stuff, which you mentioned, which we're heavily into, it's kind of our business model. Everyone on this call here, podcast, should know that that it really wasn't possible without NAHB. Now, so NAHB through its subsidiary, I don't know the best how to call it.
Our workforce affiliate, we'll call
it. Affiliate. Home Builders Institute, they are the entity that created the core curriculum that we as a state needed in order to enter this space. And that's worked out tremendously. So all of the stuff that we do for trade training around at our different locations throughout the state that have changed the lives of hundreds of people and provided labor to hundreds of companies, all was connected to the resources that were originally developed through NAHB. So you can touch upon that. And the only other thing I want you to touch on before we'll let you go to some degree, because we'll never let you go, we'll always keep calling you back, is the IBS. I know a lot of folks from Rhode Island, many have gone. And those who do go, once they are there, understand like, well, I had no idea that it was this big. I learned so much. There's so many companies there. So you could touch on the benefits of attending IBS and what you guys do to support the workforce stuff. It'd be great.
Sure. Yeah. Workforce. I say, you know, we interest rates, Bob talked about supply chain, inflation, those will all resolve themselves. As much as they're painful now, they in a lot of ways are short-term issues that will resolve themselves. But labor in workforce development is the single biggest drag on this industry's ability to provide housing affordably over the next decade. And when you talk to, like I said, we talked about our chief economist, Rob Dietz, the back half of the 2020s is really going to be prime time for home builders across the country. There's just the demand is there. It's underlying. We know that's still there. Interest rates will subside, and we also know there's a cohort of generations that are coming into home ownership spaces, or the age of home ownership. So there is a real opportunity for this industry. And the biggest governor on that potential is workforce development. So everything we can do working with the National Housing Endowment, working with HBI, working with you all, work with other states to get programs up and running, much like you have, that is critical to the success of this industry moving forward. And, you know, talking about the skills, not as plan B for a kid, but it's plan A. Colleges are great. But boy, if you want to be successful in this country, know that you can join the trades. And I keep telling people, first, you're going to get those skills. Next thing you know, you're going to be specking jobs. Then you're going to be hiring your own crews. And, you know, in 10 or 15 years from now, you're going to be on your own boat down in Nantucket and Newport because your company is super successful. And that's what we have to remind people that the skilled workforce is as much a career. It's not a job, and it's a great opportunity. So that's number one. So the great work you're doing up there is fantastic. IBS, John, thanks for raising that. Registration is now open. We're in the latter half, right up in the last couple of weeks of February next year. We're in Las Vegas. It's going to be a fantastic show. Again, we're co-locating with our friends at the National Kitchen and Bath Association. So their show is called KBiz. We're IBS. Together, we're designing Construction Week. Over 1 million square feet of exhibits will be in Las Vegas. We expect between the two shows to have over 100,000 people in Las Vegas. World-class education. If you are in the building industry, you need to come to Las Vegas to be part of IBS. Like I said, if you want to learn more about your industry, the latest trends, see the latest great products out there, and of course, be around to network with your fellow builders to find out what's working in other parts of the country to help your own business. It is the only place to be every year is the International Builders Show. So I invite all of my friends in Rhode Island, come on a plane, get on a plane and leave a 20 degree and 5 degree wind chill Rhode Island and come out to the desert where it's probably a little bit warmer than it will be there. But come to IBS. I'm telling you, you will not regret it.
And I have to echo that because I will also add the education courses themselves education courses where you have the experts in the room and they have a panel discussion about development or remodeling or whatever the case may be, whatever the topic might be. That alone the education you'll get with those free courses will pay more than pay for itself, pay for the whole trip. Okay. I've seen it myself. And the show is so large, bring a comfortable pair of shoes because right. your feet will kill you. It's so large. It's astounding, the square footage. You don't really grasp the breadth of this until you look at one hall and then you say, oh, no. There's three halls. Right. It keeps going.
Yeah.
And the second floor hall is two floors up and down.
Yeah. And this year we're doing something called for the first time called segmentation, where the show and products are going to be all in one place. So if you want to go see the tile folks, you're going to have one place to go to see all the tile. You're not going to have to be kind of scampering all over the exhibit halls. You're going to find a way to kind of be in each place and you can plan your days while you're there. It's going to be a great experience this year.
Now see, Jim, when Bob disagrees with you, it's some interest rate type of thing. It's more complicated, but I'm going to disagree with one thing that you did say. Okay. When you become a builder in Rhode Island, successful, started from nothing, you get your boat. You don't go to Nantucket. That's Massachusetts.
Yeah, so, sorry. That was my
idea. I go to Block Island.
Right? It's Block Island, Jim, which next time you hear
Block Island. Right? I used to go to Block Island as a kid. I've been out there a couple of times. That was always
next great. Time you come up, we'll take you to Block Island.
Oh, I'd love to. That'd be great.
Or Newport, as you've been there many times.
Newport, I've been to Newport. Newport's beautiful. It's a beautiful state.
All right. This was great. Anything else you all want to talk about, bring up before we conclude?
No, this has been great. Jim, thanks very much for coming on.
All right. Well, then I must say, because I have to read Paul's statement here. That's going to be it for September 23, our podcast. Thanks to our guest, Jim Tobin, CEO of the National Builders Association, and Mr. Robert Baldwin, our local area NAHB rep and past president. In the meantime, the Rhode Island Builders Association is bigger and better than ever. For all the information, education, member resources you need, call us at 401-438-7400 during business hours. If someone call me right now, or visit ribuilders.org anytime. For now, I'm John Marcantonio, and we'll see you next time on the RIBA News and Views podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks.